Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, this is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Mike Pearson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the end of the work week. It is Friday, May 20th, and there is a lot happening today, just like the other days, in the world of agriculture. The markets are moving, soybeans are up, wheat continuing their sell-off this week. Big moves to the downside in all three classes of wheat, and corn a little bit lower on the day. We'll check in with Garrett Toy of Ag Trader, talk about the market moves. And then in segment two, we're going to talk to Ellen Wall. She's the president of Transversal Consulting, noted international oil consultant. We're going to talk about the record or near record low levels of diesel in the northeast part of this country and what it means for the rest of us who rely on that fuel to keep our wheels turning. Then in segment three, Becky Razdahl, she's the vice president of trade and international affairs with the International Dairy Food Association. And IDFA is working hard on this battle that's happening between American dairy producers and the Canadian dairy industry, particularly as we look at trade between those two countries. It's a hot spot and things aren't really improving. Becky will give us some insight on what's happening there. And then at the end of the show, Chris Edgington, president of the National Corn Growers Association, will be on. We're going to talk policies. We're going to talk priorities. We're also going to talk more about Alexis Taylor, the recent nominee for Undersecretary of Trade at USDA. But first, let's dive into these markets with our friend Garrett Toy of Ag Trader Talk. And Garrett, boy, I'm going to start this conversation with the wheat market. Big losses in all three classes. Kansas Wheat Tour just wrapped up. What did we learn?
Well, the Wheat Tour found that the estimates are about 100 million bushel less than the USDA's May estimate. So the Wheat Tour came in a little bit lighter than expected, but with the dryness in the forecast, I don't think expectations are that high for hard red wheat. For the potential there to begin with. The focus in the wheat market is largely, I mean, we started out this week as a very volatile week in wheat. We started out the week with a gap higher over the weekend news that India was going to ban wheat exports. I think a lot in the trade were expecting India to help fill the gap from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. However, it turns out the combination of that it was potentially a loose ban. They're still going to export 500,000 tons to Egypt. Larger Russian production estimates along with larger export estimates out of Russia. And this morning we filled the gap from that Sunday night trade, and we've basically erased all the week's gains, and we're right back to where we were last week. So kind of a hurry up and go nowhere sort of thing. We went back up, tested those March highs from the invasion and failed to follow through. And now we're back to last week's levels. Technically, I mean, we really, you know, we get into the May 12th 1183 support, which we're starting to test here today. But if this area fails again, you got to remember that was the crop report, which showed the trade missing the hard red wheat crop by 100 million bushel, and it looks like it's getting smaller. That we should find this area support because that's pricing in the USDA report. But if this area falls, then we're looking at that 1130, 1129 area support. But kind of a, like I said, hurry up and go nowhere sort of thing. The market was pretty excited about the Indian wheat ban, but the lack of follow-through is not a positive sign.
Garrett, thinking about the wheat classes, I want to talk to spring wheat. We spoke to Lance Knudsen from North Dakota yesterday. He mentioned there's still a lot of water on those fields up there in spring wheat country. We get the planting progress reports, and we see X percentage of spring wheat acres have gone in the ground in the northern plains. How are they figuring that up? Well, we don't know what the total acres are going to be. What's your take on spring wheat acreage heading into this season?
Well, it's the clock is ticking here, especially even on row crops. Is we're less than 5 days away from the final plant date for corn in the Dakotas, with the exception of about four counties in the southeast portion of the state. But the clock is ticking here. It's a percentage of intended acres. It's what the intentions are, but that is obviously a number that is very much in flux and could change considerably between now and the next 11 days. The forecast over the next 11 days are really what's going to be key, whether they're going to get in, and they've had you know, these rains that have moved across the Corn Belt have all kind of seemingly started up in the Northern Plains, so they're getting more moisture, and it's really not improving the situation there. So I do think that this is going to be probably a larger prevent plant year for the Dakotas comparable, just because the weather forecast has not been conducive this week. But again, May 25th is our final planting date for corn, and you know, based on our calculations, you know, if North Dakota would match from last week's planting progress report, if they match their highest or fastest planting pace, they'd still only be 75% planted as of that May 25th time period, that final planting date. So roughly 25% of the North Dakota acres, in my opinion, are at risk of going to prevent plant.
Wow, that is a big number. Garrett, cattle on feed report coming out later today. As you look at what the trade is expecting, what are you watching for?
Well, I mean, I'm watching the cattle on feed. I mean, there's anticipation. Cash, it looks like early cash this week's a little bit lower. I think we found a base of support around this 131, 135, there we go. I think we found a base of support here. But, you know, I keep hearing this comments about a wall of cattle coming here. I don't see it. I mean, I think the cattle market this week and even the hogs, you know, last week's trade was largely macro related between rate hikes and concerns about the general economy. And to the fact of the matter is that it seemed like livestock this morning, or this week rather, have traded fairly independent of what the grain markets have done and have largely been focused on the macro markets, if you will. I think for the most part, though, you know, I think it's going to be pretty difficult to push below this 131 level, and I'm looking for a friendly response off the cattle and feed.
All right, we'll see that report coming out this afternoon on Friday. We'll discuss it on the show on Monday. Garrett, I want to turn our focus back to the grains, specifically the oil seeds, and even more specifically, bean oil, veg oils more broadly. We saw palm oil move into the spotlight. There's been a lot of horse trading going on in that space. What's currently the situation with palm oil trade globally?
Well, currently, we had Indonesia lift their export ban this week, and Malaysia, on the other hand, was looking to basically capitalize on that that ban and increase their market share. So there's a lot of things that are in flux in Southeast Asia as far as palm oil is concerned. But since Indonesia lifted their palm oil export ban, we've seen palm rally. So eventually, I think they're going to see some demand shift back to bean oil, and that's part of the reason that, you know, bean oil's kind of been under pressure all week. Part of that's been weaker crude outside markets. But I think this bean oil market is finally found some support here, and we'll see some demand shift over. By and large, though, a lot of this palm oil rally might be getting a little toppy in here.
All right, same story on the beans. Garrett, do you think we're going to see some downside risk in the week ahead?
Bean spreads have acted fairly well this week. I mean, I think that we've kind of met our downside objectives here. If we get bean oil rallying, that'll definitely support the soy complex. But here we are, about $17 in the front end. No, beans just really don't find much time above $15. So if you're looking to advance sales, these levels are probably a pretty decent level.
All right, north of 15, maybe get some sales on the books. That's Garrett Toy of Ag Trader Talk. Garrett, we appreciate your insight. And folks, stick with us. Dr. Ellen Wald of Transversal Consulting will join us when we return. We're going to discuss the diesel situation around this country. Stay with us on AOA. Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Farming has gotten so complex, you need another you just to keep up with it all. You'll come close when you work with your FS Crop Specialist. They know your growing conditions and your land, working for you season to season, helping fine-tune decisions to ensure a healthy ROI. And they're constantly in training to learn about the latest in seed selection, crop protection, and nutrient management. Plus, they're achieving certification standards that exceed the industry. Contact your local FS Crop Specialist to learn more. FS, bringing you what's next.
Soil, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Soil Ship Enterprise to explore soil life, to boldly grow where cover crops have never grown before. Farmer's Log, soil date 31655.4. We've come across some strange but incredibly helpful life forms. We didn't have to travel far to find them, but these organisms have proven invaluable on our trip through the solar system. They help feed us by nourishing and protecting our crops. They've built our soil structure to make it more resilient to the harsh weather we encounter. Our sensors indicate they're even helping us store carbon that plants take out of the atmosphere and put it back into the soil. Guess you can say our living and life-giving soil is the best thing to cling on to. Sorry. That's soil fleet humor. Visit your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Time is money, right? And money? Well, it's the whole reason we go to work every day. Cenex Premium Diesel protects both. With a more complete additive package for a more complete burn, Cenex Roadmaster XL helps your entire fuel system stay up and running, so you can count more profits and steer clear of losses. Now don't spend all that free time in one place, unless it's the highway. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Nothing offers an opportunity to bond and give thanks quite like breaking bread together. This is especially true as we welcome our troops back home and keep those who are still stationed overseas in our hearts. Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Since 2011, the Gary Sinise Foundation's Serving Heroes program has shown gratitude to our nation's defenders and their families by serving up nearly 500,000 hearty classic American meals at travel hubs and military locations. And now, together with our friends at Bob Evans Farms and their Our Farm Salutes program, we will help to provide even more meals nationwide, offering our defenders a taste of home and the feeling of togetherness around the table. Help us show America's gratitude through food and fellowship. Look for the Bob Evans Our Farm Salutes purple packaging at your grocery store and visit ourfarmsalutes.com to learn more. While we can never do enough to support the men and women who serve together, we can make a difference, bite by bite.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Cenex Maxtron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed on AOA. Now back to Mike Pearson.
Welcome back to AOA, ladies and gentlemen. Across the countryside this time of year, farmers are going out to their diesel tanks on the farm, and they're filling up those tractors as they head into the field to plant that food and fuel and fiber that we're going to need as we get into this fall. But as folks are filling up those diesel tanks, boy, I am hearing a lot of, well, metaphorical tears, but in some cases, I bet literal tears about the price of diesel fuel. We've been tracking on this show the national average record price, and I've got good news, bad news today. Regular unleaded fuel, gasoline, has hit a record price, new national average, record high price today, $4.59. However, good news for you folks burning some diesel, you haven't seen a record high price since Wednesday. Currently, diesel is a little bit under that $5.50 mark. Joining us to talk about all of the uncertainty that is happening in this space right now is Dr. Ellen Wald. She's the president of Transversal Consulting, literally wrote the book on Saudi Aramco, their large state-owned oil company, and she tracks these issues daily. Dr. Wald, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this diesel situation first and foremost. We've been reading for the past 3 weeks or a month about the very low supplies of diesel in the northeastern part of the United States. Ellen, what has happened there in the Northeast to draw these stocks down so profoundly?
Yeah, essentially the Northeast is really in a very bad position regarding diesel fuel for a number of factors that have kind of all come together at once. One of the big things that is affecting the Northeast is the fact that they have seen the closure of several important refineries over the past few years. There was a refinery in Philadelphia that went bankrupt, and then there was a fire, and so it's shut down. There's another refinery in Canada in the Northeast that also shut down, and so there's just less diesel being produced for the Northeast. Then when it comes to a lot of the trade that used to be going on between Europe and the Northeast would get a lot of its supplies from there, but now because of the war in Ukraine and also because of the need for diesel in Europe, that trade has been disrupted. And it's also financially risky now to bring diesel fuel to the Northeast from the Gulf through the Colonial Pipeline because of backwardation, where basically by the time the fuel can get from the Gulf to the Northeast, traders can actually lose money. So they're not incentivized to do that. And apparently we are seeing some trucking of diesel going from the Midwest to the Northeast. And the only reason they're able to do that is because they can sell it for so much now in the Northeast because prices have risen so much because of the shortage.
And, you know, this is something that I think our audience might intuitively understand, but there's a basis effectively for diesel fuel. The price change in different locations based upon, well, the supply factors in that location, just like we see in the grain markets. And Ellen, it sounds like what you're saying, the basis, the price received in New York as of now is high enough to incentivize truckers to basically fill up with their tanks in the Midwest, drive cross country, and then just sell it once they get there. That's how we're supplying diesel to the Northeast right now.
Yeah, which is incredibly inefficient if you think about it, because but the reason that is able to happen is just because the traditional supply methods have been disrupted, and we've been seeing that with other products too in the Northeast, particularly simply because the Northeast did more trade with Europe because of where it was situated, that we're just seeing that disruption because the European markets for diesel and for gasoline and other products have also been disrupted. That's now affecting trade in the Northeast. Now, these things do tend to work themselves out because we do have a global marketplace, but before they do work themselves out, and that doesn't happen immediately, we do see supply shortages and very high prices.
All right, and that's key. Ellen, you think the idea of a diesel shortage this summer is a realistic possibility?
I do think it is a possibility, although we are actually starting to see some fuel substitution for diesel simply because the prices are so high. A recent statistical survey report for April that API did actually showed that diesel demand dropped in April for the third straight month. And that's maybe in part because industrial production is slowing a little bit, but they do believe it's because they are seeing some fuel substitution where some consumers that can use a different fuel, per se, are actually switching to other fuels because of the high prices and the lack of availability.
Ellen, looking out over the summer into the fall, you mentioned the lack of refining capacity in the Northeast really is kind of the root cause of this issue. Given that, as you look out, is there the potential for more capacity to come online, or how do we dig ourselves out of this situation as we get a little bit later into the year?
Yeah, it's very unlikely that we're going to see more refining capacity. And in fact, right now, I think we're already at 90% refinery utilization. So the refineries that we do have are running full tilt. Now, we could see a shift perhaps in the types of fuels that are being refined, and we could see a shift to more diesel fuel being produced if there is a demand for it. So, for example, during the height of the pandemic, when gasoline was really not and jet fuel were not being used, a lot of refineries shifted to producing more intermediate petrochemicals, for example, that were actually in higher demand. And as those things drop, we may see the shift back to more diesel, more gasoline, more jet fuel.
All right, utilizing the existing infrastructure resources or refinery infrastructure we have in a different way. That makes sense, Ellen. I want to zoom out a little bit, look at the global picture. You've touched on the challenges we've seen importing fuel from Europe. Talk to us about the Russia-Ukraine situation and China moving in to secure some energy supplies. Dr. Wald, we talked to you in March and you said that might happen. Now it seems like it is actually happening. What's going on with China?
Yeah, exactly. Well, one other thing about the issue with Ukraine, and one of the things that we're seeing is that because of a lot of countries are not buying Russian products, that they actually are interested in buying more American products, and so there are cargoes of diesel that are actually going to Europe from the U.S. as opposed to staying at home simply because the demand and the price they can get in Europe is even higher. But when it comes to China, China is definitely buying more Russian crude. And that, as I did mention back in March, is exactly what we expect to see because China's always out for a good deal. And particularly when oil prices are so high, they're going to want to secure the absolute lowest they can. And right now, that's the discount that Russia's offering. Although, honestly, Iran has been selling oil to China furtively and for a discount. They may be a little, their oil may be getting displaced with the Russian oil. So it'll be interesting to see whether Iran can keep selling its oil to China as China continues to buy more Russian oil.
As we think about the global suppliers of oil, we've seen this administration lean on OPEC to increase production in order to help drive down these costs. Ellen, is OPEC ramping up production, or do you anticipate they might as we get into the summer?
So OPEC really seems to be very slowly increasing production, and really we're only seeing increases in production from a few countries like Iraq, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia. And in fact, a lot of that increase is actually being offset by decreases in other countries like Nigeria, Angola. There are a lot of countries in OPEC that are just not able to produce more and are having a lot of difficulties keeping up production. So I think that we're likely to see OPEC continue with its gradual increases in quotas, but really essentially now, whatever the quotas are doesn't even matter. What matters is production ramping up? And we're really seeing a very, very slow, gradual increase. I don't think we're going to see a serious increase in OPEC production this summer.
How about domestically? Are these price levels enough to get current domestic production back rocking and rolling?
So we are definitely seeing some more drilling activity going on in the United States, but they're facing some serious setbacks, and a lot of that has to do with costs of production. There are a lot of the costs to produce have gone up. In fact, we have seen drilling go up, but we're seeing some NLG production going down in the United States, and in fact, demand continues to outpace supply. We've got fewer drilled but uncompleted wells, and rig activity is not really increasing, plus oil services costs are escalating. So we're going to need a lot more drilling activity if we want to get back to 2019 production levels. I don't think that that's in the cards right now, although we should anticipate some higher production.
All right, higher production, but it sounds like, folks, if you've got a diesel tank on the farm, it might be best practice to keep that puppy full this summer. Our thanks to Dr. Ellen Wald of Transversal Consulting. Ellen, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you.
And folks, stick around. Becky Razdal of the International Dairy Food Association will be with us to talk about the tiff with dairy at the border with Canada. Stay with us on AOA.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Mike Rowe here with a gentle reminder that civilization is held together by pipes, wires, and cables. It's true. There are over 5 million miles of gas lines, power lines, fiber optic lines, water lines, and sewer lines all buried beneath your feet, and every 60 seconds, somebody digs into one. Look, if you're thinking about digging around, do yourself a favor and call 811 first just to find out what's down there. Trust me, you don't want to find out the hard way. Call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more info.
Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, where we take a close look at the benefits of cooperative ownership. Each week, we'll host a new guest and discuss how you can get the most from working with your local cooperative. And we'll learn why farmers and ranchers just like you choose cooperatives to help them persevere and prosper. Tune in each Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
You're listening to AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen reporting. Well, as we take a look at the market trade here so far on this Friday, the soy complex once again finding a round of buying with strength in meal and oil and in beans as well, with selling again in the wheat markets, more profit taking there, more of a correction after the large run-up early in the week. The corn market relatively flat, trading about 4 to 5 cents lower right now. Cattle are trading their way moderately higher ahead of this afternoon's cattle on feed report. I'm going to be watching that closely after the close of trade here today. We expect the cattle market to really just kind of chop around and square up positions ahead of the report, while the hog market under some more pressure, maybe some follow-through selling from yesterday. Now, really, confidence in the economy very weak right now, both on Wall Street and on Main Street. Confidence very low in policymakers, knowing what to do to fix the problem. That's one of the reasons why we've seen such a sell-off on Wall Street in recent days and weeks, and why consumer spending has also taken such a dip. And the ag trade has one close eye on what is going on in the stock markets and money flow as that has affected the ag trade here this week. The Dow Jones up 170 points, crude oil up 55 cents a barrel, 112.76. Right now, July corn down 4, 7.79 at a quarter. December down 5 at 3 quarters, 7.30 at a quarter. July beans up 12, 17.02 at a half. November up 7 at a quarter, 15.21 at 3 quarters. July bean meal up 260 a ton, 427.90. July bean oil up 161 points, 81.14. Chicago wheat 4, September down 13 at a quarter, 11.92 at 3 quarters. September Kansas City wheat down 18 at a quarter, 12.80 and 3 quarters. Spring wheat for September down 22 at a half, 13.06 at a half. June live cattle up 50, 132 even. June hogs down 75, 104.55. You're listening to AOA. I'm Jesse Allen reporting.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Maxtron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed on AOA. Now back to Mike Pearson.
Well, folks, welcome back to AOA. One of the key headline issues during the Trump administration was the renegotiation of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement linking Canada, U.S., and Mexico. The Trump admin rewrote it, got all three parties to sign again, rebranded it as the USMCA, the Mexico-Canada Agreement. Part of the reason for the renegotiation was because of concerns in the dairy sector, as we were watching the Canadian dairy industry modify the way they accepted imports from the U.S. When USMCA was renegotiated, the Canadian dairy industry got on board, they made some promises, made some agreements, and now that USMCA has been in effect for 2 years, it seems as though they're not holding up their end of the bargain. Joining me today is Becky Rasdell. She's the Vice President of Trade and International Affairs at IDFA, the International Dairy Foods Association. Becky, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about what has happened under the USMCA. Back in March, Canada kind of came under some fire for the way they're administering their dairy program. Becky, fill us in. What's been happening north of the border?
Yeah, you know, I'd say they made very few changes in their tariff rate quota administration to make it compliant with the agreement when it was signed a couple years ago. And so we took a dispute in the United States. It's the first ever dispute under the agreement. And our hope was that that would signal to Canada that, you know, we're serious about needing the access that they promised. And the dispute panel ruled in December of last year that we were in the right and Canada needed to correct their regulations. And Canada has just done very little to actually make that correction. So we're waiting on and working with the U.S. government on a response.
Becky, what were the requirements that the dairy industry in Canada was required to do as they joined with the USMCA? Where are they failing?
Actually, from our perspective, they're failing in a number of areas. They're supposed to administer their tariff rate quotas transparently, fairly, open up access to a number of different eligible importers, not allocate quota only to, for instance, their own producers and processors. I mean, no one in the U.S. wants to try to sell their own product to their competitors in Canada, and that really discourages imports and distorts the market. So that's where we continue to struggle with them. They continue to limit the eligible importers. That's one of the biggest problems.
When we're discussing international trade like this, we use a lot of jargon. There's a lot of sort of inside baseball that happens in these international trade deals. You mentioned the tariff rate quotas, or the TRQs. Becky, for our audience who isn't necessarily plugged into the world of international trade, what is a TRQ, and specifically in dairy, what are these these quotas supposed to do?
Right. I'm guilty of the jargon myself. I apologize. Tariff rate quotas are a way of allowing a certain amount of product into a country without excessively high taxes or tariffs, we would call them, at the time of import. So for Canada, for instance, they have a very large dairy production industry, and they want to protect that. So they apply what we call the TRQs onto any dairy imports, so, and to create kind of a natural ceiling to those imports. If you import over the amount of the quota, then you get a extremely high tariff applied to the import, and it discourages further imports.
So effectively, if I understand it, Canada is saying, all right, we're going to accept this much American product at this level of tariff tariff or import tax that is set by USMCA, but then they're moving the way they allocate those TRQs, and the American seller isn't benefiting. Is that really the crux of the situation?
That's absolutely right. We would say you promised to give us a certain amount of product, so just give us that amount of product and let the market function the way it should. Let buyers sell the sellers that they choose, and, you know, let people do their business. But they obviously don't feel that's good enough, and they apply a bunch of additional requirements that lowers the amount of product we can sell to them even further.
So we're not pleased with that. As the American dairy industry, we were promised an open market. They're not delivering, so we're fighting. Canada, can you talk about what the dispute panel looks like? What kind of information does the dairy industry, American dairy industry, bring to the table? And then how does Canada counter it when you're talking to these negotiators and these dispute resolution panels?
Yeah, you know, the way I often think of these kinds of things in layman's terms is the dispute panel it's very much like we have sued them over failure to meet terms of a contract. And so the dispute panel is a third party, neutral third party of experts selected by both governments. They came together over a period of a couple months, reviewed all the information. They had even a legal hearing with both governments, making their case, arguing all the points involved, and then they had to write a report with their findings. In this case, it's quite a legal matter. It's something that lawyers in each government will argue. Canada argues things along the lines of, for example, you say we have to administer our tariff rate quotas fairly. The definition of what is fair is open to interpretation to each government. So it does get quite legal in the argumentation of it.
Sorry, Becky, I was just gonna say, I mean, it really sounds like it's a team of attorneys getting together in a room, and they're hashing out all this minutia, these little tiny details. But that's what has to happen in order for this to move forward. The dispute panel sided with the United States, called out Canada for their lack of transparency in the other issues you've highlighted. And that was back in March. And has the Canadian government done anything to meet the requirements set by the panel?
They've made some very minor changes, and we feel that those changes are not sufficient to meet the terms of the agreement and what they should have done. And so that's the role of industry. It is absolutely right. It's a team of lawyers getting together to enforce the rules of the agreement. That's why we have the agreement. That's why we have those rules. But the U.S. dairy industry has the role to play of coming in and advising, you know, from a market perspective, from the needs of our exporters, we seek stronger enforcement. And so we are working with the U.S. government to advise them on what we view as a strategic and acceptable outcome to this first dispute.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what that outcome might look like. Becky, the next steps, now that the dispute panel has ruled, favored the U.S., Canada's taken it back, made minimal changes, where does this battle go from here? Does this work its way to the WTO? Does it stay within the USMCA ecosystem? What's this look like?
Yeah, you know, there's a few different options. We could file an additional dispute. We could retaliate under the agreement, meaning we could apply higher tariffs on Canadian imports into the U.S. We could even take actions outside of the agreement with Canada. So these are all the kinds of actions that we're looking at. But at the end of the day, things like retaliation are a short-term fix to what we really want, which is the fair and open access to Canada that we were promised under the agreement. They don't allow importers like retailers to apply for quota. We should have every opportunity to allow retailers to buy our exports. So there's really simple fixes like that long-term that we'd like to see happen.
Can we force those changes, though, from the United States perspective, or will it have to be a carrot and stick approach? Maybe it's a little retaliation and it's a little more something else. Where do you realistically, what's the timeline for this battle look like?
Yeah, it's definitely more of a carrot and stick. You can't necessarily force them to do what they don't want to do, but they did commit to it. So in terms of a timeline, the relationship with Canada on dairy trade has been a long one. We sued them in the WTO back in the 90s. So we are in it for the long haul and committed to making sure they're fair players and not undercutting us on global markets. And we are not naive as in terms of how long this might go on.
Well, that is good to hear. I'm glad the dairy industry has folks fighting valiantly on its behalf in this battle with Canada. Becky, while we've got you on the line, though, let's look around at the rest of the world. What are some other international and trade impacts that could affect the dairy industry that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, it's a tough time for trade in this administration. We don't have the authority to negotiate tariff-reducing agreements. Those are agreements that would lower the cost of us shipping overseas. So we have to make the best of the circumstance. And so there's a lot of talks going on, for instance, in Southeast Asia with the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework that we're providing input into to try to actually reduce the regulatory barriers so that we can still at least get around those and ship a little easier that way. And we just continue to push for any streamlined efficiencies in supply chain domestically and continue to advocate here in Washington that, we really do need the ability to get reduced tariffs and compete globally. We export more dairy products than we drink on a fluid milk basis in this country, and we're going to be exporting more and more. So we just need to really have an eye of the future that the U.S. could well be the source of the most production globally in the world in terms of dairy in the future. And we need to be well positioned for that.
Absolutely. Well positioned to provide a great source of protein to folks around the world and bring those dollars back to American dairy producers and dairy families. That sounds like a worthy goal. Our thanks to Becky Razdal, the Vice President of Trade and International Affairs with the International Dairy Foods Association. Becky, thanks for taking the time to join us today and to fill us in on what's happening there with our neighbor to the north.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And folks, stick with us. President of the NCGA, Chris Edgington, will join us in segment four. We're going to get a look out for the priorities of the NCGA as we head into summer. Stay with us on AOA.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
What do Mick Jagger, Barbara Walters, and Star Jones all have in common? They've all suffered from something called heart valve disease. Heart valve disease affects 11 million Americans, and if left untreated, can lead to death. Unfortunately, less than 1 in 4 Americans have much knowledge of this disease that kills more than 25,000 people every year. The good news is that if heart valve disease is treated, patients can recover and live long, happy, and productive lives. But in order to treat heart valve disease, you need to know if you have it. If you or your loved ones are over the age of 65, have been treated with radiation to the chest, have been diagnosed with a heart murmur, or have a history of heart disease, it's time to listen to your heart. Ask your doctor today about screening for heart valve disease. A message brought to you by Heart Valve Voice US. For more information about the symptoms and treatment for valve disease, go to heartvalvevoice-us.org.
54. So, basically, it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference.
Well, right now, saving seems hard to wrap my head around. Plus, with the way this year's been going...
Hey, listen, it's okay. You still got this. Just go to aceyourretirement.org. It's an online tool from AARP that can help you get your retirement savings on track no matter your age. It's free and only takes about 3 minutes.
I like 3 minutes.
Yeah, at aceyourretirement.org, you'll chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach. Just answer a few questions and you'll get a personalized plan and tips to help boost your retirement savings. Tips that are easy to understand and tailored to your lifestyle.
I like that too.
Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back. Just head to aceyourretirement.org and make your plan to start saving for retirement.
Thanks.
That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Smart stays on the road. That's why it's in your engine. Because you wouldn't settle for subpar performance. Cenex Maxtron synthetic diesel engine oils give you the smartest oil for the toughest conditions. These premium oils maintain 80% of their viscosity throughout the drain interval for superior engine performance across extreme temperatures. That horizon looks good with the competition behind you. Cenex Maxtron diesel engine oils. Oil that runs smart.
I drive my bus in a busy city. That's why road safety is so important to me. I know that I must slow down and be extra careful when I make a wide turn. Buses need more room than cars. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, remember to give buses plenty of time and space to finish turning before driving ahead. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
One of the higher risk aspects of farming is crop protection application. With label changes, regulations, equipment maintenance, and drift management, it's a lot of risk. And a great way to manage it is to rely on your local FS and FS crop applicators. They constantly train to keep up with the latest label changes, regulations, and best practices, so your crop is protected and risks reduced. Contact your local FS to learn more about our custom application programs. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Corn is native to the American continents and was unknown to the rest of humanity until Columbus arrived in the New World in the 15th century. It took less than 100 years after Columbus's discovery for corn to be introduced to farmers in Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Pacific Islands. After wheat and rice, corn is the third most cultivated crop in the world. The four nations that purchase the most corn from the United States are Mexico and Colombia, who use it as a food ingredient, and Japan and South Korea, who buy it mainly for animal feed. Around one-third of the corn grown in the United States is eaten by livestock, another third is used in the production of ethanol fuel, and the rest is either consumed by humans, exported to other nations, or used industrially. Now that sweet corn, that's the variety that most Americans grill or boil for cookouts, or just eat straight out of a can with a spoon, accounts for just 1% of all corn grown in the United States. These farm facts brought to you by the American Ag Network.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Keeping farmers and ranchers informed. AOA.
Now back to Mike Pearson.
Welcome back to AOA, ladies and gentlemen. We talk a lot about what is happening in Washington, D.C. on this show because a lot of what happens in Washington, D.C. impacts your bottom lines. It impacts the future of your operation. And frankly, it impacts the way we view the world. And it's crucial to have folks from the heartland talking to our friends in Washington, D.C. and explaining to them, hey, this is what's up out in the countryside. Well, one of the groups that does that is the National Corn Growers Association, and their president, Chris Edgington, joins me today. Chris, thanks for making the time to jump on the show today.
Anytime, Mike, anytime.
I want to talk first and foremost about a long-awaited announcement, the USDA Undersecretary for Trade. We heard on this program yesterday, Senator Charles Grassley, Republican from Iowa, came out strongly in support of Alexis Taylor. Chris, it seems like this is universal support across the sector. Where does NCGA fall with this nomination?
Oh, we're right there. I mean, this took a long time, but man, did we get a good one. Alexis will do a fantastic job. She's kind of been there before, understands the ropes, will be able to get right to work. And we have certainly been looking for somebody to get in that role because we need the slots filled at the USDA, and that's been a challenge. And this is just a great win for agriculture.
It certainly sounds that way, and it sounds like there is enough support that maybe we'll get this to a vote and actually get that position filled before too long. Chris, as you think about the other issues that you're talking about right now at NCGA, planting season is underway. What are the concerns you're hearing from grower members across the country?
Well, for the most part, it's been a little bit quiet for the last 3 or 4 weeks with grower members because they are trying to plant, to your point. And they know that calling me to help them with the weather, they just will not make that call. but obviously, you know, the other things that are there are rising input costs. I've actually done several interviews here about the price of diesel fuel and the supply situation on diesel. So that's the concern, especially as we're already looking into fall. If guys are able to get this crop in the ground and they're starting to think about, okay, what are some of the next inputs that I have to deal with? And whether it's fertilizer, which is still really high and questionably short on supply in places, to diesel fuel, to parts that are in some cases almost non-existent. People are having to fix things or borrow stuff off of somebody else or do something to get pieces going. So there's lots of issues and you know, getting Alexis in here, she can work on one of our issues that we work on year round, and that's trade and activities on moving our products out, because we do produce more than what we can utilize here in the U.S. and so we do need to be able to trade with that we don't use here around the world. And so those things are always at the top of the line.
They certainly are. And this year, this summer, in fact, we've got good news on the ethanol front as we've got E15 emergency use authorized for the summer. Chris, I know you're plugged into ethanol issues. Can we get E15 year-round again? What are you hearing in D.C. or from the folks in D.C.?
Well, we've got a lot of activity going on that topic in D.C. We've got a lot of elected officials that are trying to figure it out. And we've also got state governors. You know, here in Iowa, we just signed in a new E15 piece of legislation. And there's other Midwestern states trying to do the same. But yeah, we're looking. We've got some elected officials that are trying to figure out which way is the best way to insert the few words that are needed into the energy bill and the clean air to be able to allow E15 be year round. Got a lot of champions for it. It's definitely a lower priced fuel that is better for the environment. And I don't know what gasoline's selling for in your neck of the woods, but we're way over $4 here in northern Iowa, and you can buy E85 for still under $3. So we're trying to figure out ways to get more ethanol in with E15, E20, E30, E85 into the marketplace and help the consumer.
Those are all key. And of course, all of this is contingent upon getting a crop in the ground. Chris, as you mentioned, you are in northern Iowa. You are a farmer yourself. Tell us a little bit about how planting is going in your neck of the woods so far.
Well, it's been full of fits and starts and got off to a slow start. We really had a really good week. There's a lot of corn that went in the ground in the last 10 days. We've got some drizzle rain going on again now. But I know that hopefully we're supposed to be dry once we get through this little activity today into first part of next week. And by then, I think we should have most of the corn in northern Iowa in the ground. And if you don't have your soybeans in or haven't started working on them, people will be doing to that. But you go north of me, you get up there into west central Minnesota and farther north and into North Dakota, and they're still fighting water. They have got too much water, and there are a lot of people up in that direction have not done anything. And that includes planting spring wheat, which I think the window's closing on that pretty quick as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are a lot of conversations left to be had in that spring wheat market as we get a true sense of supply. Chris, look out a little bit long term here in your neck of the woods. How is the growing season set up so far moisture-wise? Have you guys gotten what you needed?
Yeah, we are starting the season off with enough moisture. We don't have excess, but there's plenty of moisture to get the crop up and going. And you know, it depends on which weather forecaster you read, but the drought that's out there in Kansas and Colorado and Nebraska, they say it's coming east, and that it'll probably get into Iowa. We were pretty dry last year, so there's not a lot of reserve in the tank, but we'll certainly hope that we can get enough rains scattered in for the next 4 months to give us a good crop.
That's right. The optimism of the American farmer, plant the seed, pray, and let's see what happens come fall. Our thanks to Chris Edgington, president of the National Corn Growers Association. Chris, where can folks go to keep up to date on what's happening at NCGA?
Well, the easiest is just simply go www.ncga.com, and you'll see all of the activities we're doing.
Fantastic, folks. Check that out. Our thanks to Chris Edgington. And folks, tune in on Monday. We'll break down today's Cattle on Feed report. We'll also talk to Troy Bittner of Belsham and Weather with John Baranek of DTN. Have a great weekend, folks. We'll see you on Monday right here for AOA.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to the doctor now and share it.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it twice a day.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it in the morning and before dinner.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it, and share it with my doctor.
Nearly 1 in 2 U.S. adults have high blood pressure. That's why it's important to self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. It starts with a monitor.
Now that I know my blood pressure numbers, I talked with my doctor. We're getting those numbers down.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to the doctor now and share it.
Be next to talk to your doctor about your blood pressure numbers. Get down with your blood pressure. Self-monitoring is power. Learn more at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.